Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome back Mark Sheftick of Sunnybrook to talk about the golf swing and so much more. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. All right. Welcome to the show. So glad you can be along. Every week we try to bring the best of the best on this show. Been doing it for a long, long time, and there are times when we have to circle back and check with the best of the best because they're doing some outstanding things in and around the game of golf, and this hour's guest is no exception. He is a guy who's become nationally known, not just because of this show, but because he's that good at teaching the game, but also playing the game. And we talk about this on a regular basis because there's a lot of really good or supposedly good instructors out there that have never really played competitively. And I know that Mike Malaska takes a little bit of exception to that, and some other guys. Jim McClain obviously had a very good collegiate career as well. And those guys bring something different to the table. Of course, Bob Toski played professionally, leading money winner on the tour. Doesn't get much better than that. This guy, this hour, we met more than a decade ago at the U.S. Open on the driving range. If you listen to this show, we've probably told this story before, but this is how Mark Sheftick and yours truly came to know each other. We were watching, observing the best in the game at that time. But Sheftick, as it turns out, is a phenomenal instructor in his own right and a pretty darn good player. He plays in the National PGA Players Tournament every year. And he's, you know, trying to pull back because he's so popular, and he's moved on from where he was at the country club to a different club, and you know this guy's a mover and a shaker. But anyway, big introduction for Mark Sheftick. Shefty, I can't do much better than that. You didn't send me your resume. I don't know all the stuff in there. You know, I didn't give your home address out because I don't know it. I've never been invited to your house, but I have been invited to your golf establishment. So thank you for that. It was great to see you a lot of weeks ago. Now, you know, here we are. I said, am I gonna catch him in Pennsylvania or am I gonna catch him in Florida? That was the rub there, because a lot of the Northeast instructors head south for the winter.
Again, thanks for the introduction. You're too kind. But you came up to Sunnybrook. We spent a little time, watched your golf swing a little bit. Always a pleasure. And you're right, this is the time of year a lot of the guys head down to Florida. Now that I have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, I try to get to Florida for the PGA merchandise show. And February, we do a golf school, but that's about it.
So does that mean, did I just hear that I am going to, he's ahead of, he saw the questions before he went on the, I know that he's not in the same room, but he apparently has this osmosis thing going on, because one of the questions I was going to ask him this hour is, are you headed to Orlando for the PGA merchandise show? And I almost feel like I got an affirmative on that without asking the question.
I enjoy going to the show. I go to demo day, I go to first day, and then I'll do half a day of the second day, then I'll head back home. You get to see the latest and the greatest. You get to see all the new toys, all the new stuff. And the most important thing is, you get to see a lot of your friends that you haven't seen in a long time, and you just get to catch up with everybody. And part of the best, one of the best parts of the show for me is catching up, and then when we, believe it or not, after we say hi, next thing you know, we're picking each other's brains about what are you doing next year? What are you seeing in this show? What are you putting your money into? Tell me about this technology. It's a great way to network and you know, you're always trying to, the one thing you don't ever want to do, Keith, is you don't ever want to be complacent. So each year I always try to go into each year with some new, fresh ideas for the membership, for my teaching, just to keep things going.
Well, you really have things going in the right direction at Sunnybrook. Fantastic facility, kind of tucked away outside of Philadelphia, but the members seem to really like you for some reason, and your facility is pretty nice. As he's got a lot of garage doors with not many cars, but very effective way to keep the cold of the Philly area out in the fall and into the winter. But to your credit, years ago, not that many, probably a handful, maybe six, 7 years ago, we looked and said, you know, there's an expense to taking the trip to Orlando. And we evaluated, you know, whether should we still go? We don't write much business anymore, that sponsorships and things like that. It's a different kind of show. But when we stepped back and said, of course we need to go, because it's just what you said. You see your old friends, you make some new friends, you see people that you're not expecting to see at the show, because virtually everybody is there. And it's not just in the industry. It's people that we would deem as celebrities or people that are known for professions outside of golf that have to sneak their way into the PGA show in Orlando to take in what is a phenomenal experience. And I've said over the years as well, if I took five listeners, can't get you in, but if I took five listeners, I think four out of the five listeners would fall over fainting after they walked in the door because it's so massive and so overwhelming.
You can't say it any better. I mean, whatever you can think about, it's there. And it's also good to stay current. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be with TaylorMade and Nike and Foresight Sports with the GC Quad and Gasp with Steve Gould. And again, when you go down there, you stay current. It's a phone call is one thing, but a face-to-face is a bigger deal to me. And when you go down there, you're literally exactly what you said. You're meeting and greeting people, and you're seeing and saying hello, and the people that are sponsoring you and you're with. It's that face-to-face interaction. Sometimes you go to dinners, and it you just really rebuild the relationship.
Yeah, I think that's a vital part, because you hear that relationship is everything in business, but it certainly is in the golf industry, because it is very small. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, but yes, it's still very, very small community. And to think back not that long ago, maybe a handful of decades, where they used to do this out of the trunk of their car, and to what it is now at the Orange County Convention Center, which is a massive building unto itself, and just they try to contain it. It's interesting, because Reed Exhibition is the people that put it on, and we'll have Mark Simon on in the upcoming weeks, the man behind the curtain, as I like to call him. And it's just hard to contain something that's that big. And the new companies want to come in every year, and there's only limited space. And for the Reed people to expand it too much would not be going in the right direction, even though you think, oh, of course, the more the merrier. But they want to keep it kind of capsulized, and I give them a lot of credit for doing that.
Yeah, they do a good job. It's done well. It's professional. Everyone's there. There's a lot of education. Everything. Yeah, it obviously a lot of the buying, which I've never done. I've never been a head pro. In the good old days, you go down there, you do all your buying, you see your lines. Now they already do that. But for me, I just kind of hang my hat in the toys or the technology and the simulators. I don't make it up to the apparel, but I mean, I can spend the whole day just going around seeing how much everything is. One of the major questions I do go, which really helps me out, is when you look at the new technology, the new upgrades, you know, how long does it take to put on somebody? How much does it cost? Is it new out? You know, and a lot of times you'll get the answers that you're looking for over a phone call, but that's kind of where I really seek things I would consider doing for the next season. And then, you know, what's my return of investment? If I spend all this money on these new pieces of technology, is it going to sit in the closet? And then, you know, you talk to some people there that currently have it or considering it. Then you weigh out pros and cons. You hear their takes. And again, you learn a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I find it very interesting, because professionals share information. And you would think that they would be a little bit closer to the vest and not want to share as much as they do. But there is a brotherhood and we'll say sisterhood as well amongst the PGA professionals.
Sometimes it's absolutely. And sometimes it's a bunch of little schoolgirls talking too. I mean, it goes both ways. It's worth the trip, and I get to see you. It's worth the trip, and anyone that can experience a PGA show for the first time, I think there's a little bit of a wow factor to it.
Well, I was going to clear his calendar. I just heard I got a spot somewhere on the Mark Sheffield calendar in Orlando, Florida. We're actually going to head down on Tuesday for the demo day, which is interesting because I'm not there to hit a bunch of clubs and such, but it is interesting to see the dynamic, and you run into a lot of people. Again, I said you're not expecting to run into. You certainly do at demo day, of all things. And then Wednesday, Thursday, half of Friday. I wish they would go back to 3 full days, but Reed says everybody's got to get back to work, and yeah. You know, we don't want to do that. So, but they have a fantastic concert on Thursday night, and again, we'll have Mark Simon on to talk about that and the big get that they got. But from Sheffield's standpoint, there is a lot of technology, and you use quite a bit of technology. You're kind of this, to me, you're kind of a, I call you a hybrid, and that's only meant in the sincerest form, where it's still about the golf swing. I'm using technology. I'm basically using as minimal parts that I can, but I need it to really analyze and to make you the best player possible.
Technology is a great measuring device. It's a great way to prove a point. You can't rely on the technology to teach for you. You still have to communicate it. And, you know, when someone comes in for a lesson, you know, some people, Mark, just give me a feel. I need a vision. I need a sound. You know, you're trying to minimize all the chatter that's going through their head. And you're also trying to show them, you know, you've heard this a million times, Keith, you know, feel and real are totally different. You know, when you hit a golf shot, you're literally hitting a golf shot in 1 second. And in that 1 second, there's a lot going on. And with a little technology and a lot of training on it, you can see problems. And I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect golf swing, but you can see where someone is really struggling. I give an example. I gave a lesson today to a guy, and he really, really had a hard time coming too far from the inside. And I put him on the force plates, and I put him on K-Vest, and we saw that his rotation values were very, very weak, which we already know. And I put a K-Vest on him, and I showed him that, you know, this guy is very, very, very flexible. And in golf, there's a thing called an X factor. An X factor is basically the separation difference between your chest and your hips. So if I turn my hips 45 degrees and my chest turns 90 degrees, I have an X factor of 45 degrees. And you're not trying to hit a certain number. You're just kind of see what the person is. And he had like a 65, 70, almost a 70 degree difference between his hips and his shoulders, which is a very, very, very big number. And I pretty much told him, I said, the reason why you can't get to the golf ball is, you know, you make too big of a turn. And when your hips turn, your chest doesn't stop turning, and you take such a big backswing, your upper body rotation was almost 125, 130 degrees, and 90 to 100 with an upper body turn is a really good number. And I said, the more you turn over 100, the harder it is to get your chest back to the golf ball. So I explained to him that you really, for you, not all your listeners that are hearing this is for this individual, not you, but for this individual, a big hip turn led to a lot of problems.
We'll talk more about that with Mark Sheffield when we come back from this break. He is spending the hour with us. We'll be back on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Back with Sheftie, Mark Sheftig, who is currently at Sunnybrook, and prior to that, we met him at Marion for the 2013 U.S. Open. It is crazy, Marco, to think that it's been that long, but Phil won that one 3-under, and it's gonna go back eventually to Marion in 2030. So maybe we'll still be around. Write that down. 2030, it'll be a revisit to Marion, but Oakmont has it next year, and it's going to be a fantastic tournament. Also in Pennsylvania, in Oakmont, Pennsylvania, which is not outside of Philly. So there you go. But you were talking about a specific swing speed. So break it down again for everybody that was listening in the last segment. For the particular golfer you were working with, more swing speed by doing less.
So again, when I say what I would say something like this in a seminar or on the radio, and you tell someone for this individual, because that's something you don't tell a lot of people because he was ultra mobile, but without technology, it was very easy to explain to him that you're turning too much with your hips. You have your upper body, when you don't turn your hips, you restrict, your chest is only going to turn so much. And he thought in order to get more speed, he needed a bigger turn, and it was working against him. So because he's very flexible, we got him to restrict his hips so he didn't overturn his upper body. And then he could get the speed at the right place. And and I would not have known that without the use of technology. So once again, that technology just showed me a couple dimensions in his swing that I'd be guessing at. And because I got that piece of information, that helped me make a decision that, okay, here's what we need to do. And, when he said, boy, that's the last thing I would have thought about. And he goes, I don't understand how my path went from 8 degrees to the inside to 1 degree from the inside. And I just picked up 5 miles an hour with a shorter backswing. And I said, yeah, because your swing now is more efficient. So he was already had a pretty good motion. It just wasn't as efficient as it could be. And we just tightened things up a little bit. But once again, without the use of technology, I wouldn't know certain variables. And then, you would be guessing. And well, I think he's turning too much. I don't know how much, but again, if I have some concrete numbers, I can make a better decision. I can convince the person. I can explain it to him. That's going to buy in some confidence. And then by the end of the lesson, he was pounding it. He wasn't hitting these big pushes and these big hooks. He was hitting the ball a lot more online just by restricting a little hip turn so he could get his speed out in front of the golf ball.
It's certainly better to go 250 pretty close to down the middle than it is to go 280 left or right for most swings. So it's not always about the distance. It is about the efficiency. And I think it gets lost a lot of times in recreational golfers' minds.
Well, again, Keith, a lot of people, one of the big concerns people have is everybody wants to hit the ball further, and I can respect that. And a lot of people go about it in the wrong way. When a lot of people hit the ball shorter, the first thing they think about is, I need to make a bigger turn, and I got to swing at it harder. Most people do not hit the ball long enough because of the contact of the golf ball. So you can create a lot of speed, but if you can't deliver that speed in the right position, it doesn't go that far. If you hit it off center, if you add loft, we try to build a swing to what the person can and can't do, and we try to make the swing most efficient. And a lot of times, now there are some people that do need to generate a little more speed, but most times people will overachieve with distance with better contact.
And the contact part is the foot there, about 6 inches before the ball and 6 inches after the ball. Would that be fair?
I would say 2 feet to 2 feet. 2 feet before and 2 feet after is kind of golf mecca, in my opinion.
Oh, so you give an extra foot on each side. That's good.
But like TrackMan and GC Quad and FlightScope, basically you're measuring 2 feet to 2 feet. And when people look at swing path, you have to understand you're only measuring 2 feet to 2 feet. It has no idea what you're doing on the backswing. It has no idea what you're doing on the downswing until the club gets about 2 feet from the ball. That's all it measures.
See, and that's all that really matters. Keep that in mind. It's the 2 feet before and the 2 feet after. That's all technology reads. So no matter what your backswing looks like, as long as you get it back into that zone, you have a very good chance of striping the ball, and then you can work on everything else in the meantime. It's Mark Sheftick spending the hour with us. This is a guy that definitely knows what he's talking about. Currently at Sunnybrook, previously at Marion, and some other stops along the way, but one of our regular contributors, to one of our go-to guys when it comes to golf instruction and so much more. We'll be back after this bottom of the hour break with Mark Sheftick.
Hi, this is David Ledbetter. Keith Jones will be right back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Mark Sheftick, a longtime visitor to this show and a guy who always contributes. It's interesting, because when somebody looks at you, they think, well, how much golf does this guy know? And how much can I get out of this guy? And then you show them a few things and they say, oh, wow, this guy's quite knowledgeable and knows the golf swing. And then you tell them, yes, I competed in some championships, some PGA events and such. And they're like, okay. So it keeps ratcheting up from there.
I was able to play pretty well for a long time. I still have a little bit of game. I feel, don't laugh at me, Keith, but I kind of feel good now that I'm 50. I'm kind of out of golf purgatory. So I feel like I can compete competitive again, where I can move up a set of tees. I can play against some of the seniors now, because these young kids are hitting the ball a very long way.
It does get demoralizing, even for PGA professionals. Doesn't I've talked to different ones, and they were like, yeah, you know what, these kids hit the long ball, you sit there, and I was a good collegiate player, and I was a good PGA professional in tournaments and successful, and then boom, reality hit you.
This has been a very big topic in my world for a long time, and you know how stat keeping has changed. So I was talking to a pretty knowledgeable person, and he said, Mark, if you hit a lot of ball with a club with a ball speed over 165, you physically probably couldn't find it. He said the way that the ball was built, the way the clubs are built, the ball was meant to curve less. The equipment is so much more forgiving. And the fact that these guys are having a ball speed over 180 miles an hour and are consistently finding the golf ball says a lot about today's technology.
Okay. I just heard 180 miles an hour, and I heard it, but I'm going to get Shefty to repeat that. 180 miles an hour?
Ball speed.
Oh, thank God. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, scared me there. If that's what I was saying. Not club head speed. Holy cow. Yeah. So what is the most you've seen? What have you seen, about 135? I forget what Bryson gets.
I would say, you know, if you get like a Bryson or – you know, the freaks of the world, like the Kyle Brookshires, the Jamie Sadlowskis, they could probably move it up to close to 140, you know, going all out. And that's not with the intention of finding it. That's just, I got to get one in the grid and I got to pound it.
Yeah, the long drive guys, that's a whole nother level of craziness. Exactly. The long drive guys know many over the years.
But, I mean, some of the ball speeds that these guys are getting, I mean, there were a couple reported at 190. So that means with the right launch and the right spin conditions, I mean, you're literally carrying the golf ball 320, 330, 340. So, and again, I'm going to give you an opinion, Keith. I'm going to give you a flat-out opinion. I'm not saying it's factual. I don't think making golf courses longer is the way to go about it. You can't hide length from these guys. I think when I was at Marion, Justin Rose won at 1 under par, and the golf course played 6,800. The fairways were tight. There was 2 par 5s, really tough par 3s, and really tough par 4s. Basically how you win a golf tournament on the PGA Tour: par the par 3s, try to get a couple on the par 4s, and destroy the par 5s. That's pretty much how you win a tournament.
Yeah, I remember him. Even as good as he was striping the ball, there were struggles along the way. It was interesting. But that's what they do and what Mike Davis did for a lot of years at the USGA for that tournament, because they want that to be the hardest tournament ever on the planet. So, you know, it's...
Well, when someone asks me about what a good golf course is, a good golf course to me is when I get all 14 clubs dirty.
Nice.
You know, that's kind of my definition where, you know, I have to put a premium on hitting a fairway. You know, I have to think about, I just can't, you know, rip at every pin. And, you know, I love playing golf courses when each par three are four different yardages. I don't like when I play four par threes and they're all 210. To me, that's, I don't like that. I like a 130, a 170, a 190, and a two, you know, mix them up a little bit. And it you have to think and you have to play different shots and you have to know how to flight the ball and you have to know how to curve the ball. And you know, it just doesn't, I mean, when you play bomb and gouge, you hit it as far as you can, you try to wedge it close. You know, when you have fairways that are that penal, and if you miss the fairway, you can't control the spin, you can't control the trajectory. And remember, when the greens get firm and fast, it's the difficulty can go up almost four or five shots.
But just watching it, professional golf as a spectator, you don't want to see a pitch and putt. You don't want to see, as you said, bomb and gouge. I think it's the first time I heard that. That's classic. But you know that driver, everything, and then right, it's short iron into the green. People can't relate to that. Besides, where's the challenge in that? You know, I find it interesting. I played a place called Fairwinds a number of weeks ago in Florida, in Fort Pierce of all places, and it was a nice little gem tucked in there. But there were some lengthy par threes, and you know, you really had to go, am I taking out the 5 wood here, or am I taking out the 5 iron, or what are we hitting? You know, and you've got to figure it out. And sometimes you figure it out on the fly, which is not necessarily where you want to be.
Exactly. I played in the State Open a couple of years ago out of the place called Longview, and just outside of Pittsburgh, which was a beautiful golf course. And I was playing with this kid from Drexel, big, tall kid. And hole number three was 220, you know, par three, kind of a narrowish green. I hit a 7 wood, you know, hard. He hits a 3/4 6 iron. And I looked at him. And he's like, what? I said, did you just hit a 6 iron? He's like, yeah. I said, my God. I said, I can't wait till I turn 50.
It's true. Yeah, you were in that no man's land. Anything from like 45 to 49 and a half is, you know, guys are waiting. That's what they're trying to do on a Champions Tour. I mean, my friend John Claffey, who has been a tour edge now for a lot of years, was at Sonor Tech before and the Kent and other places like that. Tour Edge is concentrated on the Champions Tour as their destination because it's less expensive to get your clubs in the bag. Sometimes you just let them use them, and they use their nil part, the name, image, and likeness. So it's more affordable that way, because to get your clubs into a bag of a guy on the PGA Tour, that's a whole nother level. But there's so many name guys out on the Champions Tour, and they're more coming, you know. It's like, you know, Phil has arrived, and, you know, all these players, and Longer is, you know, in his mid-60s, and that guy is still playing lights out. And it's just, you know, it's the competition is pretty fierce out there. And it's interesting because that's a different game. Those guys play a different game than the guys that play on the PGA Tour, and they recognize it because as we all age, unfortunately, for better or worse, our game ages as well.
You can't say any better. You know, and again, I think, you know, with technology, we're actually still hitting the ball out there a lot further than we really, when you get to a certain age, you're not really trying to gain distance. You're just trying to maintain distance.
Yeah, and that's important. So what do you do for your students, and what do you suggest for people listening to be able to maintain distance?
Well, I mean, Keith, I hate to say it, but the number one piece of equipment you have to take care of is your body. Hmm. You know, let's say, knock on wood, that, you know, no major back injuries or hip or knee or, joint, or if your elements, if you don't have too many elements and you're okay, I mean, stretching, moving. One of my goals, Keith, is I try to hit, you know, I try to swing the club X amount of times a day. If once you stop moving and swinging, it's very difficult to get things back. And, you know, I've put more as I've gotten a little older, and, you know, you wake up with a little more aches and pains. Fitness is a necessity. Now, I'm not a big believer, because people are busy, that you got to spend all that time in the gym. But if I do want to maintain a level, then it has to be somewhat of a priority. And that priority is make sure I go talk to a trainer or talk to someone that really knows what you're talking about. So when you do your type of exercise, most times at my age, I'm trying to do a lot of things that are at my body weight. I'm not powerlifting. I'm not lifting heavy weights. I'm maintaining strength. I'm maintaining flexibility, and I'm maintaining speed. When people start thinking they need to get in the weight room, well, you can start putting on bulk and start slowing things down. So I brought in a guy who was a TPI specialist, and he did some screenings with myself and some of my students, and I was fascinated on what he was able to expose with people's bodies. And the funny thing was, Keith, he would screen somebody, and they were all my students, and he could tell me exactly what their swings were and exactly some of their flaws, and he was spot on every time. And then he said, well, here's a program that we're going to need to do, and if you can do this, you know, half an hour a day, I want you to get up, I want you to do these series of stretches, you know, I need you to do a little bit of this if you want to maintain with what you have, because once you stop doing it, it's going to reduce. And, you know, with a lot of the seniors I teach, you try to convince them that, guys, we're not trying to gain speed. We're trying to maintain speed. Mm. You know, I think that's because if you can maintain a certain speed, you can still play competitive, unless, you know, there's an ailment or something that, you know, damages the body. But you got to keep moving.
Well, even then, even if there is damage to the body, you need to figure out how to heal that the best way possible and still keep going. Believe me, from a guy who's been wrecked in a number of different ways, I speak firsthand on that. People say, does your back hurt? I said, my back hurts every day. If we just talked about my back, that's all we talk about all day long. But, you know, you have those things. It's there. It sticks with you. You have to address it, because if you don't, you do indeed reverse. It is crazy to me to think you're thinking that you're maintaining and stuff, but if you're not doing what you need to do, you are not maintaining.
Exactly. And, you know, one of my jobs when I give a lesson is to protect the student. You know, let's see if we can make their swing efficient, you know, so we're not overstretching our joints and our ligaments and, you know, putting our body in a position where we can use it, where we're just not pulling our arms down, where our wrists and our elbows get a lot of banged up because you're overusing it. I mean, people say to me all the time, Mark, what causes pain? Well, you're overusing it. You keep using it and using it and using it, and you're swinging your arms and you're swinging your arms. Eventually, your muscles and your ligaments and your joints are going to wear out.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like stretching a rubber band 100 times. Eventually, it's going to lose a little elasticity. So when I give a lesson with somebody, one of my major concerns is, how can I protect them? How can I create a swing? And, you know, I know it's easier said than done, but how can you create a swing that they're going to enjoy, that we can hit the ball a little better, we can maintain our speed? Now, with the juniors, that's a little different, because you're trying to get them to create speed. But, you know, whatever walk, whatever stage they are in their life, in their golfing career, you know, when we're talking to, you know, the senior generation, you know, movement is really important. Flexibility is really important. Not, you know, and maintaining strength, hand strength. Hand strength is a big part of power. You know, flexibility in your upper body and your lower body. I try to do a good job to make sure whatever swing I'm building, it's kind of protecting their back. There's kind of protecting their wrists and their ankles and all that stuff.
So you were saying a bit earlier, if I heard you correctly, you've been working with a trainer. You have access to a trainer. For those of your students, what do you suggest to them?
So I brought up this guy. His name is Rye. He is he's a physical therapist. He's the lead physical therapist at Johns Hopkins, and he's a very good now. He is really good too. He is, I don't want to say it this way, but he's kind of a freak. You know, he can, you know, 3 wood off the deck, he can hit over 300 yards.
That's
with a John Rahm type of length of backswing. It's just incredible. I've given him a couple lessons, and sometimes I shake my head and I said, how do you do that? And he qualified for a U.S. Med Am. But, you know, one thing I'm always trying to do, Keith, is I'm always trying to learn. So I brought him up to my performance center, and I wanted him to work with some of my players because, you know, two heads are better than one. And if I have respect for somebody, can he give me some information that I don't know to help them make a better golfer? So I'll be the first person to tell you, I don't have all the answers, but I'm very curious on why things happen. So I'll do that every once in a while. And then when we did that, I was amazed on what I learned on just doing some certain screens and checking out different mobilities. And it was absolutely fascinating, and how he could pretty much tell me what their swing flaws were without watching him swing. He was spot on every time.
So this guy, Ra, you said he hits it about 300 off the deck. And what about his swing? It's compact, or what is it?
It is a tight, compact swing. Now, you know, he was a good athlete. He played hockey. He played lacrosse. He qualified for the U.S. Mid-Am last year, so the guy can play, which for me, that definitely gives some – I have a lot of respect and accolades for that because the guy knows golf. And, you know, he came up, and I gave him a couple lessons, and we kind of got a really good friendship going. And I called him up, and, you know, I did enough research on him. I just don't bring anyone up, but I did enough research on him. And I know he's a body specialist. He does a lot of rehab, a lot of PT, a lot of TPI stuff. He gives a lot of accolades to Greg Rose, who's a co-founder of TPI, Titleist Performance Institute. And he's very, very, very good, and he's very thorough. And it was incredible the detail he did when he did screenings on all my players. And then when he finally did me, I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be interesting. And, you know, he gave me a couple nuggets that he said, Mark, these are the things that you need to do. Your left side is very, very tight. If you want to continue to move through the ball a little better, you got to do these stretches on a daily basis to loosen up these muscles, and you got to foam roll this, and you got to do the Peloton gun on this right here. And I've been doing it on a daily basis and the last 2 weeks, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I can actually feel a little bit of a difference. And if I keep doing this, you know, all of a sudden you're like, okay, I can actually start to feel a difference. So Keith, if you did 30 push-ups a day, right? If you did 30 push-ups a day,
yeah,
you know, after a week, you know, you just did 210 push-ups. You do that in a month, you know, all of a sudden, even though you're not, it takes 5 minutes, maybe not even that much to do 30 push-ups a day, but you do that over the duration of months and months and months, all of a sudden, it doesn't take a lot of time to do, and all of a sudden, you get a lot of benefits from it.
No question about it. With Mark Shepnick, heading to the break. We'll be back.
Charles Barkley. Golf is good. Tee it up with Keith Jones.
And back to wrap up the show with Mark Shepnick. I thought there for a moment before we went to the break, he was trying to get me to do 30 push-ups as we were sitting here.
What?
It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. Actually, it is interesting because those kind of exercises where you just control your own body weight are very, very effective. And people don't think about that. And some people can't do a regular push-up with their in the plank position. So do it from your knees. You still got to use your upper body strength to do that. And you could do it off a chair. There's a lot of different ways. And I'm glad you brought up Greg Rose, Dr. Greg Rose and TPI, because I've known Greg for decades now and was one of his first test subjects before he started TPI. And he was based out of the Washington, D.C. area, so went to see the guy. They had Advantage Golf, and this guy was way ahead of the curve, and it's been a while since we had him on the show, but I'm glad you mentioned him, because the stuff that he has done, the biometrics and all this other kind of stuff, which didn't ever exist in the game of golf forever, and people did it and they didn't know what it was, it's now so scientific. It's such as you talk about seeing a guy at the PGA merchandise show. I'm going to make sure you see Greg Rose. I stop over all the time, get a little bit of his time just to say hello and catch up a little bit. But that guy's super, super busy, and he's got what he's done with TPI has just been amazing and such. And they branched out. It's not just golfers. They work with baseball players. They work with all kinds of different athletes, and that's kind of where he and Dave Phillips have taken that organization. But it's really something to see. But when you get a guy like Rye that you're talking about, physical therapist that has tapped into that, and you know, Pete Holman's another one of our go-to guys, a physical therapist, yeah, and inventor and stuff with Golf Forever. And I mean, these guys mean business. I've seen my share of physical therapists over the years, and I could probably be one if I wanted to sit and study and get that certification. No, thank you. So I have a lot of respect for those guys. But what they've done for the game of golf is just unbelievable.
I would say they single-handedly saved and extended the careers of a lot of people. And they created just a whole different way of looking at the body and understanding the body. And, you know, I think we've really branched out in having models. In other words, we're not trying to get everyone to have the same look. You know, we know that everyone's built different. Everyone uses different aspects to their golf swing. And, you know, you kind of put their fingerprint on it of what their body can and can't do. And then you try to build around it. I mean, the one thing that Rye kept saying that I really liked was he said, I want you to feel like you're swimming downstream, not into the stream. So let's get our body working for us, so it's going to be easier. I thought that was pretty good.
No, that's a really good analogy of a way to do it, because you want to make things easier. Same with the golf swing. Golf's hard enough without having to worry about the swing all the time, and things bleed into your head, and you think about things you shouldn't at the wrong time, and you know, these swing thoughts and everything else. By the time you get on the course, you should be ready to go and just trust your swing. And of course, that's easier said than done. I know people are saying that's easier said than done. I get it. I've been there and I live there a lot of times. But there are things you can do. But really, I like what you said earlier in the show, Shefty, and it kind of summed things up. The most important thing around your game of golf is your body. You know, it's body and mind and soul a little bit in there too. But that is the thing that's been overlooked. And people say, but look at John Daly, you know, and look how he doesn't take care of himself, and look how he's just, you know, some guys are just gifted, right?
Yeah.
That's gonna, you know, his son is playing lights out at Arkansas as well. I mean, you know, it's just genetics. You know, this happens, but it doesn't mean that other people who don't have the God-given ability can't work to strive to get better because they take care of themselves. We hear this so, you know, over the years so many times, and thank goodness for us, golfers are usually some of the fitter people on the planet.
Well, I mean, the last thing Rye kept saying to everybody was, he said, you know, how much is this going to help me? And he kept saying, well, at the end of the day, if you did this, you're going to lose a little bit of weight, you're going to look a little better, you're going to move a little better. So even if it doesn't help your golf game, it's just going to help you just in general.
You got to like that. I mean, that's, you know, we'll have to reach out to Dr. Greg Rose and find out more about this Rye guy if we don't do it through Shefty. But anyway, Mark Sheftick has been our guest on TW Keith Jones. But as usual, we're just out of time. But you heard good information from our guest this hour, Mark Sheftick, renowned instructor and a guy who knows a little bit about the golf swing, and it's very dangerous on the golf course, so watch out. Well, you get out there and practice your game, practice, take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.